Alex Stewart, Annie Rugit, I gotta tell ya, I'm still a little misty-eyed over that beautiful meeting with the mouse himself.
I'm right there with you, Freddie Martin. There are a few things in this world as magical as getting to sit down one-on-one with Mickey Mouse. And he was so open.
No question went unanswered, even the juiciest questions we threw at him.
You're right, Alex, but remember, we are sworn to confidentiality under the Magical Secrets Act under Title 1901 of the Disney Magic Keepers Code of 1928. Whew, what a mouthful.
Wow. I'm impressed that you remembered that code, Freddie, and because of that, you don't have to worry. My lips are sealed.
You know, you don't see those character traits and icons of that caliber very often. And believe you me, I know from personal experience. I'm often reminded of that time that I had to share a sleeper car on the 210 from Butte with Chilly Willy the Penguin. His heart was, it was frozen through and through.
Annie, don't go to the dark place, Annie.
Come back into the light, Annie. He's gone now. He can't quack his cynical views on Depression-era architecture and the fall of neoclassical influence on skyscraper design in Manhattan's Upper West Side at you anymore. You're safe with us.
Rococo, it's too a legitimate artistic form for architects to draw influence from, you filthy, flightless monstrosity.
Oh, Al, I've never seen her this bad before. We gotta do something, and fast.
Oh, okay, Freddy, I've got an idea. Here, break this under her nose.
A cookie?
Just do it!
Okay.
Okay, there, Annie, breathe it in. Yummy cookie. Nice cookie.
Oh, yummy, nice cookie. Oh, whoa! Whoa, guys, what happened?
Well, you got caught in a marginally funny, wildly obscure, and mostly obtuse opening bit for The Backside of Water, a podcast that delves into the rich history, awesome stories, and fascinating details behind your favorite Disney attractions.
Thankfully, we had one of these delicious cookies to snap you out of it.
That cookie really does smell delicious. You know, to be honest, I've never smelled a cookie like that from here in the park. Where did you get it, Al?
Well, it's funny you should mention it, because I got it from the next location on our Grand Circle tour of the park, Minnie's house. And it's a good thing we're headed over there, because to be honest, I need to stock up. That was my last cheese chip cookie.
Well, what are we waiting for? Let's head on over.
Wow, guys. Just looking at the outside of this house, I'm already noticing a theme. Hearts.
Oh, you can say that again.
I mean, look at the windows. Look at everything outside here, as in the stone heart inlay on the porch here. Minnie is definitely into hearts.
I see what you're saying, Annie. I wonder what Imagineers were trying to get across using all these hearts. Hey, let's head inside and see if this is a trend that continues.
Oh, what a quaint little abode. And sure enough, hearts everywhere.
Oh, guys, over here on the mantle.
Yeah, what is it, Al?
Oh, nice. It's pictures of Minnie's number one beau, our man himself, Mickey Mouse.
Well, you guys know what this means, right?
Not at all.
Yeah, Al, what are you talking about?
Well, these pictures on here prove that this is a Mickey mantle. A Mickey mantle.
Oh, my goodness.
Al.
Really?
That was awful.
I gotta side with Annie on this one, pal. I'm usually all in for a ride on the pun train, but that one was just so bad.
Oh, truly terrible.
You'll see, one day I'll be revered for that joke. It was just ahead of its time, like pretty much all of my humor.
Al, even though that joke was the worst of the worst, I'm glad you brought us over to this mantle with Mickey's photos on it.
Yeah, why?
Because from the hearts everywhere and these photos of Mickey on the mantle...
The Mickey mantle.
Right. The mantle. It seems pretty apparent that Minnie is all about love.
Aw, no doubt there, Annie. This mouse has got it bad for Mickey. I mean, when will they get married already? I mean, she's got a host of other suitors lined up and waiting.
No, you're absolutely right. Mortimer Mouse also has been chomping at the bit to get in Minnie's sights for decades now. As we learn in the 1936 cartoon, Mickey's Rival, the mouse is willing to do anything to get his former girlfriend back.
Wait. Isn't Mortimer Minnie's uncle? Seriously, back when they were producing Mickey Mouse comic strips, The character Mortimer Mouse was introduced in a 1930 strip as Minnie's cattle farming uncle.
Okay, things are getting weird now.
Yeah.
I think this is explained pretty easily, guys. We're assuming that there's only one mouse in the Mickeyverse that's allowed to be named Mortimer.
Wait, that's not a thing? Hold on. You're telling me you're not the only Freddy in the world? My life is a lie.
Sorry to break the news to you, buddy, but get back on track here. We can easily reconcile this by understanding that both mice share the first name, and only the first name, in common.
And why does that name sound familiar?
Great observation, Annie. If you'll remember back to the early history of Mickey Mouse that we heard in part one of Mickey's House, Mortimer Mouse is the original name Walt thought of giving the character who would eventually become only known as Mickey Mouse.
Oh, that's right! What a cool little homage to the early days of Walt's relationship with his number one mouse.
But guys, in the end, it doesn't matter which mouse is named what. What matters is that Minnie's ex-boyfriend, Mortimer, could totally tear this power couple apart. I don't know about you two, but I personally can't live in a universe where Minnie and Mortimer end up together.
Oh, Al, not to worry. Your universe is safe. Believe it or not, Mickey and Minnie are already married.
Nope, no way. I don't believe it, Annie. They live in separate houses. All the shorts portray them as just dating all the time. There's no way this can be true.
Would you believe it if Walt said it?
No, now you backed me into a corner. Maybe.
Well, in a 1936 interview, Walt is quoted as saying, "Well, in private life, Mickey is married to Minnie."
Walt? Oh, that was you, Annie. That was a great impression. Oh, well, batter me up and call me a corn dog, Annie. You're right. This is a revelation.
I can only imagine what the gossip rags would say about this if they ever caught wind of the juicy news.
Well, according to some reports, these two kept up appearances of merely dating so as not to lose that magical feeling of new love on screen.
Oh, genius. You know, their magic is really, truly unmistakable.
And that magic began many, many years ago.
If I'm not mistaken, Minnie Mouse first appeared in Plain Crazy, right?
You are correct, Freddy.
That's the first Mickey Mouse short ever made by Walt Disney and Ub Iwerks back in 1928, right?
One and the same.
So that means that Minnie has been around as long as Mickey.
Correct again.
That's incredible.
Yeah, it really is. Minnie has been by Mickey's side from the very start. She would also appear alongside Mickey in the classic Steamboat Willie, as well as a number of early Mickey cartoons.
And screen time isn't the only thing these two share. Believe it or not, Mickey and Minnie shared the same voice actor in the early days.
Yeah. Wait, wasn't the voice of Mickey in the early days played by Walt Disney?
That is correct.
So, by default, that means that Minnie's voice was also Walt Disney's in the early days.
Gosh, that's crazy.
It really is. But Walt's voice wouldn't do for Minnie for very long. In 1929, Walt found a new actress for the voice of Minnie Mouse. Her name was Marjorie Ralston. And believe it or not, he didn't have to look far to find her. You see, back in these days, these projects were all in-house. They're like do-it-yourself projects. And when it came to finding a new voice for Minnie, Walt did what he always did and looked in-house. After having all his female employees audition for the role, it would eventually be given to one of the ink and paint employees. Ralston would voice the character of Minnie for a mere 3 shorts before begging to give up her Minnie Mouse duties due to her extreme shyness. Ralston would go on to recommend another ink and painter by the name of Marcelite Garner for the role. After Ralston heard Garner doing an amazing impression of Minnie Mouse one day while working. And it's Garner who is credited with creating the signature Minnie Mouse personality we've all come to know and love over the years. The role of Minnie's voice would be passed on to 4 other actresses throughout the years, finally settling on Russie Taylor in 1986. Taylor would be the longest-running actress to voice Minnie Mouse from 1986 to 2019.
I actually have another fun and romantic fact about Russie Taylor.
Lay it on us, Annie.
Okay. During a recording session in 1991, Taylor would meet a gentleman by the name of Wayne Allwine, who happened to be voicing Mickey Mouse. The two obviously worked closely together due to the nature of their respective roles. One thing led to another, Sparks flew, and the voices of Mickey and Minnie would eventually marry and stay together until Allwine's death in 2009.
Aw, that might be one of the most serendipitous love stories I've ever heard.
Isn't it?
It just goes to show that Minnie's loving disposition causes everyone around her to fall in love as well.
That's a very good point, and speaking of personality, we've established thus far that Walt's personality can be found within each of the characters known as the Fab Five, and Minnie is one of the Fab Five.
Yep. I always love hearing your thoughts about which traits each character represents, Freddy.
Well, I love the idea that Walt Disney shows up in all five of these characters, and it's an interesting one because here we're going to do a little gender bender and find out what characteristic in Walt's personality is embedded within Minnie Mouse. It's really fun to think about, and I think of a lot of different things when I think about Minnie Mouse, but one of them is her dedicated passion for fashion. She's a dedicated follower of fashion. And there is nobody at the time who I think was more of a little clothes horse than Walt Disney himself. If you ever go back and look at some of his outfits, they were a little bit outrageous. I like to think of his outfits, you know, they're pre-zoot suit, but he would wear the baggy coats and he would have the really cool vest. Some of them, you know, they seemed a little bit inappropriate on a movie producer, you know, the head of a movie studio. They should have the finest threads on them, but somehow he would come across as sort of sloppy and wearing his hat on the side, cocked to the side, but he always had the cool hats. And in fact,
he was fashion forward.
He really was fashion forward. In fact, Walt Disney, in recent years, the Disney products have come up with a clothesline made after Walt's sort of signature debonair, slightly goofy style. It's called 28 in Main, I think. Yeah, 28 and Main is the name of the Walt Disney inspired clothing line. So when I think of Minnie Mouse and her fashion, and she is a fashionista, I kind of think that Walt thought of himself as a little bit in the same way.
So Minnie really is like what Walt was striving to be.
Yes.
But maybe not,
yes.
Not hitting the mark every single time.
Yeah, not quite. He loved clothes.
I think that's amazing. Annie, what do you think?
Well, I wonder, so when I think of Minnie, I think of like super sweet and generous and loves her friends. And she also kind of like gushes over Mickey. And I wondered, was Walt a gusher?
I don't know. I mean, I think what we see in history is a very different Walt behind closed doors compared to in the studio. And I would say that I think that when it comes to his daughters, the dude doted and gushed all about them.
Yeah, I think so too.
And so I could definitely see that as a personality trait. I mean, obviously not across the board. I don't think that Walt was loving to everybody, as he's notorious.
And Walt was very sentimental of his own past, his childhood, his family, which I see in Minnie, you know, with these beautiful, all the hearts and just wanting to fill a home with a lot of love.
Well, and I think that it's undeniable that Walt Disney was a romantic. That's all there is to it. The dude had an idealistic romanticism about him that I think is perfectly portrayed inside the character of Minnie Mouse. But I gotta say that when it comes to what part of Walt Minnie represents, I personally think it comes down to one thing that was inescapably one of the biggest parts of who made Walt Disney Walt Disney, and that's Lillian Disney.
Mm-hmm. That's right. His romantic interest, co-star for life.
I like that. Co-star for life. You know, well, and I would love to, if you guys don't mind, we've never really shone a light on Lillian Disney in the entire show. So I'd like us to take a couple of minutes here to look at the life of Walt's heart, Lillian Marie Disney. So Lillian Marie Bounds was born on February 15th of 1899. Notice that's one day after Valentine's Day, all about the hearts. Just throwing that out there. She was born in the rural town of Spalding, Idaho. After graduating high school, Bounds moved to Los Angeles to live with her sister Hazel. During this time, one of Hazel's friends helped Lillian get a job at a little no-name cartoon studio by the name of Disney Brothers Cartoon Studio. She was working as the secretary for the ink and paint department when she met the lanky, oftenly oddly dressed, charismatic co-owner named Walt. Though she was 2 years older than him, that didn't matter. He was smitten. When Walt would drive some of the staff home at the end of the day, he would wait to drop Lillian off until last, even though her home was the closest to the studio. You know, and eventually Walt's wooing would work on Lillian, and on July 13th, 1925, they'd be married at Lillian's brother's home in Idaho. Throughout their marriage, Lillian was notoriously Walt's biggest champion and at times challenger. Soft-spoken and level-headed, Lillian was the perfect complement to her bombastic, sometimes impulsive, and enthusiastic husband. You know, she also helped in perfecting his vision on many occasions. In fact, as we talked about earlier here, when Walt suggested the name Mortimer Mouse for his new creation, it was Lillian who would be the one to step in and tell him that the name wasn't suitable and that he should consider Mickey instead.
She had great taste.
She really did in a lot of ways, and it's amazing to see that, this may sound morbid, but during research for this time, I looked at Lillian Disney's obituary, and that was one of the biggest things that they said, is that Lillian Disney was one of the most secretive and soft-spoken collaborators of Walt Disney. That essentially he would pass a lot of ideas off to her and she would give the yay or the nay on it. And if she gave the nay, oftentimes Walt would be like, nope, I'm not going to go this route. So you're absolutely right that she really did have a way with Walt. And when it came time to build Disneyland, Walt's muse was right there guiding his creativity. In fact, Walt would pay tribute to his wife by naming the luxury or salon car of one of his steam trains the Lily Bell. She would then personally decorate the car, and to this day, it's still used to entertain Disneyland's most distinguished guests. Lillian and Walt would remain happily married until his death in 1966. After Walt's passing, she would eventually marry in 1969 to a man named John L. Truyans, who's very little is known about this guy. They would remain married until his death in 1981, but her involvement with her first husband's legacy would continue on. She would go on and end up donating $50 million to open a concert hall in downtown Los Angeles that would eventually open a few years after her death under the name Walt Disney Concert Hall. And in a sadly poetic turn, Lillian Disney would suffer a stroke on December 15th, 1997, exactly 31 years to the day of the death of Walt Disney. She would end up passing away the next day, December 16th, at the age of 98.
Wow. She really was an amazing person, very inspiring.
She was indeed, and now I see it, Al. I get why you believe Minnie represents Lillian. Minnie is Mickey's compass. Lillian was Walt's compass. Mickey is wild, adventurous, and impulsive, while Minnie is level-headed, calm, and collected. Walt was wild, adventurous, and impulsive, whereas Lillian was level-headed, calm, and collected. Minnie has been there for Mickey from the very start. Lillian was there for Walt from the start until the end.
Not to mention one fun little detail. I noticed that Lillian worked for ink and paint, and the first few women who voiced Minnie were in ink and paint as well.
That is so true, Annie. Great observation. That is an unmistakable connection. Okay, even though it was totally cheating to change the Fab Five rules, I'll accept it because we got to learn about the wonderful and lovely Lillian Disney.
Thanks for allowing me to bend the rules on that one just a little bit, bud.
What are friends for? All right, we might want to move on in the tour, guys. We've been hanging by this mantle for quite a while.
Mickey Mantle. Oh, good idea, Freddy. Let's get moving.
Hey, take a look at this magazine on the armrest of this chair. It says, Jessica's secret.
Eisner!
What?
He's referring to the magazine. That is clearly a reference to another specific catalog that houses the not-so-family-friendly secrets of another woman. This sort of edgy reference can be referred back directly to the Michael Eisner's reign as CEO from the 80s to the early 2000s. Eisner believed that there needed to be cheeky references throughout Disney's IP in order to keep older audiences engaged. Oh, boy.
Oh, yes. But thankfully, after Eisner left the company, creatives began shifting away from those edgy references, but they haven't been able to wash all of them away. This magazine here being one of the leftover remnants.
If anything, though, it's great to see it here to remind us of eras gone by.
Couldn't agree with you more. Hey, gang, let's take a look at these books over here. Doll's Mouse, Little Mouse on the Prairie. The puns weren't only reserved for Mickey's house, and I feel more at home here because of it.
Mickey Mantle. Amen to that!
You dog.
Those are some puns I can actually appreciate. Okay, let's head to the next room, you guys.
Ah, the boudoir.
Oh, simple. Quaint. Filled with hearts.
Of course. And have you guys noticed that this is one of the room types that we weren't able to see over in Mickey's house?
What do you mean?
So, we saw living rooms, sitting rooms, barns, and sound stages, but we never actually saw Mickey's bedroom.
You're right, Al. I didn't even notice that.
I'm guessing Imagineers chose to show the complementary nature of Mickey and Minnie through giving Mickey rooms that Minnie didn't have and vice versa. You have a complete home only if you combine them together, just like you have a completeness only when you have Mickey and Minnie together.
Ooh, that is a great observation, Freddy. And good work, Imagineers. I'm very impressed.
And speaking of Mickey, take a look at this pic over here in the bouquet of flowers. Clearly a gift from Mickey Mouse.
Ooh, a very eagle eye, Annie. This is clearly a reference made by Imagineers to bring light to Minnie's most famous quote about finding the love of her life. She says, "Just imagine, he'll stride into the room, a light will glow from him, I'll hear music, he'll bring me flowers and he'll sweep me off my feet, and I'll know he's the one when he makes me laugh."
Safe to say that if the door was open when he walked in, a light would be glowing from him. We hear music throughout the house, here's the flowers, and clearly he sweeps her off her feet because he makes her laugh all the time.
Bingo!
That is a deep reference indeed, and that's what makes it so great.
Hey guys, over here! Even Minnie's computer is heart-shaped.
Ah, ooh, she has her email open. We've learned a lot of lessons about emails and not reading them. We should probably not pry too much here.
Good idea, Al. Let's head on to the next room, the kitchen. This is why you couldn't find a kitchen in Mickey's house. It was over here at his better half's place. The whole time, it's just lending to the idea that these two houses equal a full home.
Oh, and getting to the kitchen couldn't have come at a better time. Look at the table. Cookies!
Ooh, I'll grab one. Oh, wait, hey. What the heck? What's going on?
What's up, Annie?
These cookies. When I go to reach in the bowl full of cookies, it's actually empty, even though it looks full.
This is an outrage. I refuse to eat an intangible cookie.
It's a holographic trick, you guys. That holograph is meant to surprise and delight young children, but I guess it infuriates older children.
What was that, Freddy?
Nothing.
Well, what this really means is that we need to find something else to eat, Annie.
Yeah, good idea, Al. Let's take a look around.
Well, up here I found some cheese, salt, and pepper shakers.
Okay, I found a cake in the oven. Oh, wait, it's just unbaked itself. Weird. Oh, wait, it's rebaking itself.
Crazy.
Oh, that sounds like a lost cause to me, Annie. What's in the refrigerator?
Cheese. Ooh, hordes and hordes of cheese.
Oh, of course there is. What about the freezer?
A carton of cheese chip ice cream.
Ugh. Well, it'll have to do.
Yeah, desperate times calls for desperate measures.
While you guys dish up your treat and I dish up my lactate, I can't help but notice how bare bones this house is compared to Mickey's house. I mean, there's a total of 3 tiny rooms, and there isn't even a space devoted to meet and greets with Minnie. This really is a testament to how Minnie hasn't received the accolades she deserved until recently.
What do you mean, Freddy?
Well, Minnie appeared in quite a few cartoons alongside Mickey right up until the mid-1930s. It was then that she effectively disappeared for quite a while. At most, she would make guest appearances on cartoons, or shorts would feature her pets, but Minnie Mouse would go dormant as a main character for many, many decades. Many decades, as I'd like to say. It wasn't until 1986 that the Walt Disney Company could start to shine a light back on Minnie, making that year the Year of Minnie in the parks. Then, in 1988, Minnie would finally receive a starring role in a piece of Disney IP.
Okay, wait, so you're telling me that Minnie didn't star in anything until 1988?
That is correct. She starred in a television special called Totally Minnie, with Suzanne Summers as the host. Come and knock on my door.
We'll be waiting for you.
Where the kisses are hers and hers and his. Sorry. Yep. Minnie even sang a duet of Don't Go Breaking My Heart with the great Elton John. I'm telling you, what a special. I always thought she and Kiki D had something in common.
That entire phrase, that entire paragraph that you just said, Freddie, is so encapsulated into 1980. I love that was just, you basically explained the entire decade. And even though this house was built by Imagineers in 1993, it's still much smaller than Mickey's house. Though I do have to give this house credit because it's a lot more interactive than Mickey's house, even though it may be smaller and less prominent.
I know growing up, I always enjoyed Minnie's house more, because there were a lot of things happening, especially the kitchen, right?
Yeah, it's tangible.
Yeah, it's just crazy because Minnie is everywhere today. We just kind of take her presence for granted, I guess.
Yeah, I think we really do.
Thankfully, lately, Minnie has been getting more of the attention she deserves. In fact, in 2018, Minnie received her own star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. And let me tell you, that is the only Hollywood Walk of Fame dedication ceremony that I have ever been to. I heard she was getting her star that day, and I raced down to see it. And what a pageant it was. It was so great to see all the polka dots and everybody out there just cheering her on. She's also starred in many shorts and series, and after decades of waiting, she's the star of Mickey and Minnie's very first attraction, Mickey and Minnie's Runaway Railway.
I'm glad to hear she's finally getting what is due to her.
I totally agree, you two. Minnie Mouse is an enduring icon that champions true love, humility, grace, quiet leadership, and a childlike love of fun. Her long and loving relationship with her guy Mickey is an iconic representation of the idealistic love stories of days of yore, but also reminds us that in real life, true love does endure.
Minnie also reminds us of the great Lillian Disney and how she helped Walt create the world the way he wanted to live in it. Lillian's examples of leadership and support at home shaped her daughters into great champions of their father's legacy as well, with Diane going on to found the Walt Disney Family Museum.
Wow. This is all great information. I learned so much today, and this is a great episode. Can you believe that we only have one left to go before we get all the way through Toontown?
It really is unreal. Though at the same time, it feels like we've been in Toontown for over a year now.
Now, you know what they say, Freddy, time drags when you're having fun.
Though I don't think that's how the saying goes.
Yeah, not at all, pal.
Before we go, we need to tell people about our exciting news.
Ooh, that's right, Annie. Thank you for reminding us. Folks, we have launched an all-new experience over on Patreon.com known as the BSOW Network. Over there, we're offering exclusive monthly content, including a brand new monthly show called BSOW Backstage, a podcast meant to complement each month's Backside of Water episode. This unscripted show allows us as hosts to let our hair down and go deeper nerd than ever before on that month's topic, including obscure facts that didn't make it into that month's episode because they were too deep nerd, personal stories, and on-topic rabbit trails that will lead to who knows where.
We're also moving our other podcast, Did You Know Disney, exclusively to the BSOW Network. It's still hosted by Alex, Annie, Mike Mulligan, and myself, and still features the exact same format we've always used. The only difference is we will finally be able to offer high-quality episodes every month without skipping months at a time. This month's episode will be focusing on the rise of Michael Eisner.
So, you're saying that BSOW Network members can get up to 3 episodes, including a monthly Backside of Water episode, every month?
That's exactly what I'm saying, Ms. Rugit.
Zounds!
We'll also be releasing bonus content every now and then, and we'll also be giving priority tickets to live events and running special merchandising and other offers to BSOW Network members in the future. So if you're a fan of what we do, consider becoming a BSOW Network member.
You can find the BSOW Network by going to patreon.com/BSOW Network, or if you don't want to do that, just go to patreon.com and search for BSOW Network. You'll find us.
Now, I also want to be very clear, and we all want to be very clear here, the Backside of Water podcast isn't going anywhere. All of our previous episodes, this episode that you're listening to today, and all future episodes will be forever on podcast platforms across the globe, free of advertising and free of charge. So no need to worry that it's going away.
Speaking of which, if you liked this episode of The Backside of Water, please, please consider leaving a friendly review over on Apple Podcasts.
And you can also follow us on Instagram and Twitter by searching for The Backside of Water.
You can also join our Facebook group by searching for The Backside of Water podcast over there as well.
Now, as you exit, please watch your head and watch your step.
And if you happen to miss your step and hit your head,
please watch your language. So long, folks.
Bye.